It is a fact. Cities grow best where farms grow best. And that is why some of the nation's biggest cities are planted on some of the nation's best farmland. This leads us to ask, can farms survive their cities?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1426th edition of the Food Chain or Food Chain podcast. Perhaps you're among our friends over there in Dijon who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, a few decades ago, California's Santa Clara Valley was called the Valley of Heart's Delight for the spectacular abundance of its tree fruit farms. Today, it is called Silicon Valley for the abundance of its digital technology companies. This transition from growing low-value food to manufacturing high-value digital information systems sets up a competition for resources between city and farm. Consider this. A single-family valley home recently sold for $4 million. Well, it did have four bedrooms. Given the money this sale generated and the property tax money it will generate in the future, this is the kind of sale that city fathers and mothers want to see more of. How to make that happen? What Santa Clara County was trying to do and is trying to do is what most cities do when they need more money. Rezone the agricultural lands on the fringes of the metropolitan area into commercial and manufacturing, thus chasing out the rural folks and replacing them with the big money folks. This never-ending competition between city and farm leads us to ask, can farms survive their cities? Well, here to help us find an answer, we have Stephanie Rocha, who is the owner of Nest Box Farm in San Martin, California. Stephanie, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you for having me.
Do you remember that time when there were orchards in the Santa Clara Valley?
I do remember orchards in the South Santa Clara Valley. I'm sure when I was a child, there were elderly folks talking about the development at that time.
Right.
So there's been a lot of change just in my lifetime. Yes.
Yeah. Didn't take long, and all of a sudden all of the fruit trees have moved out and the big companies have moved in. And well, there, as I understand it, there are some very powerful financial interests that would like to dispossess you of your farm and move a big factory in. Do you intend to fight for them for that land, for your farmland?
I do. And frankly, I feel that I have been fighting in just the 8 years I've been here. There are many competing interests. It is, it's a challenging position to be in,
No.
because as most of us know, farming is not considered a particularly lucrative, profession. And so there are those pressures, absolutely.
Why do you want to fight?
Well, I'm here on this farm because of a childhood dream. I mean, this was a seed planted in me since I was a little girl. And I'm so grateful that I'm in a position to, starting 8 years, just over 8 years ago, starting this farm. And I've seen countless children, and not just children, but adults, elderly people of all professions, all backgrounds, in all phases of life, come here and say, "Wow, this is just magical. I love this. I love this." And the truth is, we need to have a connection to our rural roots, and we need to be able to reset, and we need to create those spaces for the community to have that space if they don't have it for themselves. So it is absolutely worth fighting for. I mean, we're faced today with so much dystopian news about what our future looks like. And right now, I think it's even more critical than ever that we fight for our rural communities and our farms in particular.
Will you have help fighting for your farm?
Well, it depends on what you mean in terms of help. I have a lot of cheerleaders. I'm so grateful because we really are a community hub. That is what a small farm in particular does in its community. And so I have many supporters who will fight alongside me, help me as best that they can from their vantage point in terms of, you know, legal help. As we talked about just before coming on to the show, I do have a legal background. I practiced law for over 15 years. And so I am grateful to have that background to help me navigate through these challenges because I'll tell you, they are complicated to navigate through. And I am learning myself how to navigate through local politics in particular, because it's local politics and local government that are really our biggest obstacle as a small agricultural operator.
Okay, good. So you're going to fight, and you probably are going to have some people help you, which is really good. Now let's go to Nest Box Farms. I think in looking at your farm, that you have something very special there. And I think your principal crop is the peace that you bring to people who come to visit the farm, which is extremely valuable for city people, especially city people with children, to have a place to go where they can cuddle a chicken.
Absolutely.
And so that probably is crop number one, gets right down to it. And so tell us about Nest Box Farms. What is it, and how do you operate it?
Sure. And you know, Michael, I've never heard it said that way, but I think you're absolutely right. I think our number one crop really is that peace and that connection that we provide for people, city and suburban folks. And we have folks that come from San Francisco and all, you know, all the way up the peninsula looking for that. But the Nest Box Farm is actually a small 5.25-acre biodiverse farm. And by biodiverse, I mean we grow a number of different crops, and we raise a number of different animals, but our staple and what we are known for is our pasture-raised chicken eggs. So we have a flock of just under 500 hens, and we raise them outside, and we supplement them on an organic, no corn, no soy, no seed oil layer feed, and a whole grain feed. And so we are niche in that way because it's hard to find those kind of eggs, to be honest. Yeah. And so we do have, we have a good customer base, and we're grateful for that. And in fact, we have so much demand for our eggs that we can't meet the supply because we are a small farm. But we also do seasonal produce, and so we have a very small orchard of stone fruit and then citrus. But most of what we do is invite people to come in, invite the community, invite the public in so that they actually experience it, not just stop at a roadside farm stand and pick up the fruit that's already been picked, but actually come on to the farm property, take a look. We're very transparent, and experience picking yourself. So we do offer guided U-picks. It's a little bit different than your kind of conventional U-picks in that we're not just one big farm offering, you know, strawberries or, you know, cherries or what have you. We actually forage through the garden and I point out all the different things that guests can pick. And then they get to meet our animal family here on the farm as well.
Let me ask about your chickens. They must be happy chickens.
I think they are, yes.
Okay. And that must become manifest to the people who are visiting the farm to see happy chickens, because happy chickens are happy, and obviously so.
Yes. So you can see for yourself that we have very happy, healthy chickens who are, they're getting their exercise outside, they're getting their vitamin D from the sunlight, and they're getting fresh air, and they're getting to do things like dust bathe out in the dirt, where, you know, chickens in your conventional chicken farm are not able to do, because they're inside in a warehouse with controlled air settings.
And they're eating bugs, and they're eating grasses,
yes,
and they're eating everything that chickens would otherwise eat outside.
That's right. Chickens are omnivores. I call them opportunists. They are looking for anything. They're very curious as well, and they're looking for bugs and grubs and worms, and they'll peck at leaves and fruits. And you know, when I take guests into our orchard, I tell them, don't pay too much attention to the low-hanging fruit, because our chickens have already had their way with that. You're going to find plenty of peck marks on those. So yeah, they're happy, and they get to forage like a chicken naturally would for what she prefers to eat.
And that, of course, makes a difference in not only in the eggs, but in the farm too.
Absolutely. Yes. It makes a difference in the nutrient density and quality of the egg. And it also makes a difference in just, you know, how the consumer feels about purchasing or eating eggs from hens like ours.
Tell us about the reaction of children and chickens. My
Oh,
daughter,
children.
when young, won a blue ribbon for being a chicken cuddler.
I didn't know there was such a thing. That's great. Yes. So kids, generally speaking, love the chickens. You know, they're small animals. Kids can feed them. Chickens aren't very shy. They'll come running up and eat right out of their hands.
And they do.
And they do.
And so the kids can have that interaction with an animal in a setting that an animal is enjoying, which is a lot different than a factory-raised chicken. And that's what we're talking about today with Stephanie Rocha on the Food Chain. She is the owner of Nest Box Farms in San Martin, California, just down the street from Silicon Valley. And that is the story we're talking about, is how can Stephanie Rocha and Nest Box Farms survive the competition for land with those giant corporations that are living in Silicon Valley? This is The Food Chain, and when we come back, I would like to talk a little bit about the nutrient content of eggs. Do stay tuned. Right back.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Oldson.
With respect to the nutrient content of eggs, I often get the opportunity to speak to school kids about nutrition and whatnot with respect to farms. And one of the tricks I like to do is bring two eggs to class, one from a farm like Nest Box Farm, and the other from a factory farm that I buy at the supermarket, a cheap egg. And I hold up the eggs and I say, children, can you tell the difference? And of course they can't, because an egg is an egg is an egg. But then what I'll do is I'll talk about the different ways they are grown, how Stephanie grows her eggs by letting her chickens run wild and eat things that chickens would otherwise eat, and then supplement that with some really good feeds. And in an industrial setting, how the farmer has an economist and a chemist to tell just exactly how much feed to give the chicken so that it won't fall over and die. And so does that become manifest in the egg itself? So I'll crack an egg, both eggs, and put them in a saucer, have the kids come and look at the eggs. And the eggs from a farm are rich golden color, and the yolk stands up, and the egg, the shell itself is really thick and hard to break. And conversely, the cheap egg has a real pale yellow yolk, and it just lays flat on the dish. The shell itself is really thin, paper thin. And so the kids can actually look and see the difference in the egg. And I think it leaves a very profound impression on them. And then they go home and say, Mom, where do we get our eggs? So I think that is what kids learn when they go to your place about eggs and about nutrition, and thus the value of it for parents to take kids to your farm. So I always think that's a principal crop of the Nest Box Farm. You do have lots of other things. You have a gift shop, which makes shopping pleasant for the parents too, and lots of different crops to pick in season.
Correct.
Okay, good. Well, let's turn now to the conflict between your farm and the county planning department.
Yes.
Tell us about how the planning department has plans for your farm that you just don't like.
Yeah, so we'll have to go back to 2018 when I moved to this property to start the farm.
Well, that's a while ago then.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so just a little over 8 years that we've been operating the farm, and we've grown and learned through some challenges over that period of time. But one of the things I was so jazzed about in 2018 when we moved here was that the Santa Clara County Board of Supervisors had just adopted the 2018 Ag Plan. And I don't know if you're familiar with the 2018 Ag Plan, but it is a plan that lays out the importance of agriculture in South, particularly here in South County, and how and what we're going to do about preserving it. And not just preserving it, but stimulating the ag economy. And one of those primary means of stimulating the ag economy and ensuring that we not only keep our agricultural remnant, but grow it, was through allowing agritourism. So agritourism, as you may know, is a separate source of revenue, is a different revenue stream from the agricultural product itself.
It's not exactly commodity farming.
Correct.
Again, going back to your core product, which is bringing people back to the farm and to nature.
That's right. That's the agritourism crop, if you will. Again, people, especially young families, for all the reasons you mentioned, Michael, of, you know, having children connect and learn about their food and the source of food and nutrition, people are really hungry to come out and experience kind of farm life and learn. You know, they've realized that they themselves are disconnected from their food source. And with so much going on as a result of big ag, you know, like supply chain disruptions that we've experienced in the last several years, a lot of food recalls.
Even in the last several weeks. I mean,
Cyclospora, yes, the recalls from that. So people are learning. They're learning and they're beginning to appreciate their local farmer more and more and more. And we're experiencing that. We are small South County farms community here. So I was really excited to move out here and start this childhood dream that I had to farm. And so I got right to it, started putting in the infrastructure, the fencing and the planting. Gosh, we've planted hundreds and hundreds of trees on this property. It was just kind of a big dirt, big rectangular piece of dirt. And that's unfortunately what you'll see a lot when you drive through this area. And then I started to invite the community in for a farm tour. You know, they pay for a ticket, and then I guide them through the farm, give them a tour. Or I would do like a wool dryer ball workshop. So I would lead, I would have our customers or our guests meet our small flock of sheep. We'd pull out the fleece that was from the last shearing of our flock, and I would teach them how to use carders, and we would make wool dryer balls that they would take home. Well, largely because of a particular neighbor who did not like to see the community coming into my farm, the county received complaints. And unfortunately, the county planning department had not yet updated its ordinance to be in alignment with the 2018 ag plan. So it's an outdated ordinance that applies to our rural zoning area that does not allow for agritourism. The only agritourism that is allowed is a U-pick. And again, that's kind of the conventional, you know, people come in to the field, they pick, they pay, they leap. That model really doesn't work for most of us. And it's just not, it's an insufficient model. And so the county planning department, through its code enforcement division, shut down all of our agritourism. And that led us into a very precarious position because, again, we need that diversified revenue stream. Sadly, eggs and seasonal produce do not pay the Santa Clara County bills. And so we had to get creative and work with what we are currently allowed under our old outdated ordinance, which is the U-pick. So like I mentioned earlier, we do we do guided U-picks where we take people through our garden and the orchard, and then we collect the eggs and they learn about the animals as well. But we need more. We need to be allowed to have those events and gatherings on the farm. And right now we are not allowed to do that. And it is really a shame because we are now 8 years past the adoption of that 2018 ag plan, which set out a policy in support of agritourism. And
so they invited you in, come,
yes,
come build a farm. We want you to do agro-tourism. We want you to bring people here. And we need to bring people here. But you can't bring people here because the neighbor doesn't like it. And we haven't changed the rules yet.
That's right. That's right.
So isn't and there they always say something like that? I mean, if you're an attorney, and you got to know there's always something like that, right?
Yes. And, you know, but this is an interesting case for me because my expectation, even as an attorney, was that Well, since the policy is in favor of this, just because it hasn't yet trickled down into actual regulations and law, the planning department isn't going to divert already very limited resources to cracking down on small farms. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But I was wrong. I was wrong. And so we find ourselves, this small community of small farmers in South County, up against what appears to be a pretty obstinate and not sympathetic planning department. Why that is, we don't know. And their response to us is, well, we're working with what's in the books now, and that is this, that this is their code book, this is what they work by, and they don't see big picture. They only see the code book in front of them, and that is what we are stuck with.
And is it not true that the zoning department has come down with, has instituted an effort to enforce even stricter, zoning on small farms?
Well, it's interesting. So there is something called the rural zoning amendments, which you may have heard of. And the rural zoning amendments were supposed to be the amendments to that old outdated ordinance that then put the ordinance in alignment with the 2018 Ag Plan. The problem is the way that the planning department drafted it, for whatever reason, would have actually put us small farmers all out of business, just about all out of business, because of the criteria we needed to meet in order to even be allowed any type of what they called on-site agriculture, so like any type of agritourism. So it either was the result of a major oversight or incompetence or just not understanding the ag. Its own South County ag community, or it was some weird effort to try, as you said, to restrict farmers even more so that they don't have to deal with residential complaints. And this is where the rubber meets the road, because the reason that we continue to run into these issues is because agriculture and residential together don't really, they just don't go together. It's kind of like oil and water. And many people who move out to South County move out here because they have this romantic view of the peaceful, quiet countryside where I'm just going to have, these big pastures and maybe my horses, and that's it. But the truth is that agriculture truly. Working farms can be loud, they can be dusty and dirty. There are things that when people move out here, they realize, well, wait a minute, I don't like that. There could
Well,
be a farm.
it's like the age-old story of moving next to the airport.
Exactly.
Hey,
You move
what are
next
you
to the
doing
airport.
landing airplanes here?
That's right. That's
We
right. And it's
move to the country for peace and quiet, and oh my goodness, it's not really peace and quiet. There's work being done out here. There's people with tractors and people with trucks and
heavy
cows
equipment.
and my goodness, it's not what I thought it would be.
Right. And smells. You forgot the smells, Michael.
Smells too, yes.
That's
And
right.
all of these things, yes, that make life interesting out in the country. So those people who moved out into the country are thinking, well, this isn't what I came here for, so I'm going to fight you and other farmers. And they have the ear of probably have some money, and so they're gonna fight it, and there you are. And then the zoning department also, for the metropolitan core to keep growing, it has to find new land to keep growing on, which is, and in developing that land is more money for the city. So they have, your interests as a farmer and their interest as a planning city planning department or county planning department, they're not the same. They're
That's
almost
right.
like the same situation as the city people who moves out to the country and say, hey, what do you have cows for out here? This
That's
doesn't
right.
make any sense. So there's this core conflict of interests that exists for every city that's trying to grow and to grow into the countryside. And yet, how do you fight that fight? And that to me is really interesting because you are fighting it. And from what I've read and from the people I've talked to, you are having an impact on the body politic because the Board of Supervisors have voted unanimously to stop the zoning department in its tracks to say, wait a minute, we have to work this out so that we can still keep our rural community and its agriculture. So you must be doing something right, girl.
Well, I'll tell you what we did. We got together and we
Okay,
formed.
we're going to hold that. So when we come back, we're going to hear how you got together and kick some butt at City Hall. It's going to be
Okay.
fun. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson, with Stephanie Rocha. She, the farmer of the Nest Farm in San Martin, California, which is just down the street from Silicon Valley, where four-bedroom homes now sell for $4 million. Oh, my goodness. Do stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to learn how Stephanie fights. Right back.
Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-704-1662. 800-704-1662. That's 800-704-1662.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place in Bremerton, Washington, August 1944.
Bremerton was the best Liberty port of the war, and I had a secret weapon for enjoying every second of it. Roller skates. No kidding. Now, right outside the gates of the base was a sailor bar, and almost every sailor would stop right there, but not me. I kept right on going till I get to the roller rink. Most of the guys thought I was nuts, but I wasn't. You see, there was no better way to meet girls than to skate around in a rink in your dress blues. Back in those days, I was limber enough to do tricks like wrapping one leg around my neck while I was skating on the other. Yeah, most of the guys thought I was crazy. They'd see me leaving the base with my skates and just shake their heads, but heck, I laughed all the way to the bank.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Talesfromatincan.com.
Attention investors. This is a simple commercial on the investment value of gold. Gold continues to make new highs. In good markets and in bad markets, you need to have your portfolio balanced with gold. Learn about owning physical gold or getting a gold-backed IRA. Make this simple call right now.
800-414-1657. 800-414-1657. That's 800-414-1657.
Sponsored by Reagan Gold.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
New Farms, Bob Hofstetter.
MetroFarm is filled with marketing and business management basics that entertain and enlighten. Case studies show how successful MetroFarmers persist and prosper.
Cheesemaker, Todd Shriver.
MetroFarm is a well-researched one-stop guide to the business of small acreage farming. There is so much to this book I've found helpful.
Engineer, S.M. Smith.
MetroFarm's business information alone is more informative and helpful than most books that specialize in business. Get this book. You will not be disappointed.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it is a fact. There is a difference of needs for between those who run the local governments. They always need more money. They never have enough money. So how do they get more money? Well, they keep raising the taxes on everybody, but pretty soon people are going to start throwing eggs at them if they're not careful. So they have to be a little bit judicious about how they keep raising taxes. So why not grow the metro out and develop more land and have more property taxes and whatnot? So that's generally what cities do. They grow out, kind of like a fire spreading through the countryside. And so there is that inherent conflict of interest between the rural parts of our communities and the urban parts of our communities. Stephanie Rocha and the Nest Farm is in that conflict, and she is fighting back. How?
So, Michael, a number of us were very concerned when the rural zoning amendments were published by our county planning department. And so, essentially, through necessity, survival, we got together and we formed a grassroots association called the South County Farms Association. We now are an official mutual benefit nonprofit corporation. And we met with our local supervisors. We met with the neighboring city mayors. So that includes the Gilroy mayor and city council members and the Morgan Hill mayor and city council members. And we talked to anybody and everybody who would listen, because people just didn't really know what was going on. And of course, through the public outreach process that the planning department is required to perform, many people did become aware, we were all very vocal. And that is how we fought back from a community kind of grassroots position. And the Board of Supervisors heard us, and they voted, or I should say they voted to approve a referral that Supervisor Arenas, the supervisor of our district, had proposed, that would have required the planning department to go back and redraft the rural zoning amendments with all of these things in mind. And so this referral had all of the concerns and the wants and desires and the needs of our South County Farms Association. So we really were heard. And that is now on the desk of the planning director and her team to use and to reference in redrafting these rural zoning amendments, so that they don't put us, not only do they not put us out of business, but they actually help us to thrive and grow and stimulate our ag economy.
So you found some friends in government, because why would they go with you instead of the money? Because you had the votes.
We did. We had the community behind us. We absolutely did. And the community leaders in government will listen to the community, because when they get the sense that this is actually a really big issue, and it wouldn't make for good headlines in the newspaper, then we ought to listen. And so
It was a unanimous vote by the Board of Supervisors that said,
it
hey, we
was.
have to stop and look this over. So when there's a unanimous vote, there's a pretty good indication that the vote out in the community is paying attention. And so they have to pay attention.
That's right.
Now, I wonder, we're talking a little bit earlier about the need of city people to come to grips with the fact that they've lost touch with their food. It's gone. It grows to some place in central Mexico or someplace, and they have no control over that food other than what is afforded by the rules and regulations of government. So having access to farms such as yours gives them that direct contact, that direct touch with their food. It would seem to be that would make a great political crusade for city people, for those who live in the country, to promote to their city neighbors, to their big city neighbors. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we're here making certain your food is real and safe.
That's right. And, you know, local food security is a real concern and issue. And we've experienced the effects of breakdowns in our, you know, large, you know, supply chain infrastructure, where we do have, you know, foods coming from all over the world. When that breaks down, and it's very fragile, people realize that it's not something that they can reliably count on. And so, you know, I'll give you an example. I don't know if you recall, Michael, the bird flu scare. And so
the avian flu.
The avian flu. And I don't know the true numbers, but I know it's in the millions of chickens that were culled. They were killed because of exposure or even just possible exposure to the avian flu. And as a result, there was an egg shortage. Well, not only did I experience, you know, a ramp up in demand, but I also had my regular customer base feel, you know, grateful that they know their local farmer. They know that they can trust that they can get their eggs from me, and they can, you know, pick up the phone or come by and say, hey, Stephanie, are you impacted by this? How are things going? Am I going to get my eggs? And they're going to know that they're going to get their eggs, you know? And so it is important to have local food security. It's important to know your farmer. How is it that we live in a culture today where, you know, you might know your doctor, you might know your lawyer, but you don't know your farmer, the one who feeds you? I mean, that's preposterous to me. I don't understand that. We've lost our way, but many of us are finding it back and finding a lot of comfort in knowing their farmer. And I thought, a number of customers who are regular customers who get pretty much all of their groceries from our South County small farm community. They might get their eggs here, their tomatoes from Taramico Farms, their veggies from Full Circle Farm, their dairy from San Martin Milk Company. I mean, we serve our local community and our local economy, and our local governments therefore need to value us the way our customers do.
Then the crusade, I think, has to go from you to the city people. And if you can sell the city people on the need for them to get to know their local farmer, and shop at their local farmer, and convince them that this is not a fad. This is a matter of survival, and for the farms, and for the food. So if you can get that across to city people, you'll win the vote. And if you win the vote, then all the supervisors and the mayors and whatnot will go along with you. And the zoning people in the planning department will have to sharpen their pencils and come up with a way of making it all work for you.
That's right. And that is actually kind of the sweet spot that we've been able to put ourselves in, because that, I think, is how we've been able to make, I think, good progress, good headway in making these changes in law to support us. We're not there yet. We still have quite a ways to go. We need a redraft of the rural zoning amendments. But now we have our planning department being directed by their bosses to work with the ag community, to form an agriculture advisory committee, work with the stakeholders so that you're putting something out there that benefits them and our overall community and does not harm them.
So who is the boss of the, who are the bosses of the zoning people?
Well, ultimately it's our County Board of Supervisors. Now,
so who's their boss?
Well, it's us, it's the people, right? It's the voters, the citizens. We are the ultimate bosses, and we need to remember that when we kind of take back our power in terms of what, how we want to raise our family, what we want to put on the dinner table. Ensure, you want to ensure that you have good nutrient dense, local, healthy food. We'll make sure that your local government knows that as well.
Yes. And we are the boss. And it's incumbent upon us to fight for what we think is right and necessary all the way around. And if we can transmit that, or what we believe, to those out there in the city who have lost track of their food to the extent that they no longer have any connection to it. I always think, Stephanie, that everybody is very, very nervous about their food when they no longer have any connection to their food. I mean, they can gobble it down without thinking, but they always think about it. That's the first thing a mother teaches her child.
That's right.
Is how to know what to eat. Animals do it. People do it. Eat this, don't eat that. And so I think it's a fight that's worth fighting. And you make a good fighter. So
thank you.
So I suspect that you're able to draw your neighbors into the fight as well.
Yeah, you know, we have mostly just positive support from our neighbors, but you know, there's always going to be a one or two, or you know, and that is just what it is to live in a community, right? We don't always agree on everything at all times, but we just need most of us to agree to it.
Yeah. And so if you can take that fight to the city people who live up the road in Silicon Valley and let them know what you really have to offer, I bet you win the fight. Now, what do you think? Do you think the fight is winnable?
Great question. You know, I do. In my heart of hearts, I do. But I'll tell you that in navigating this process over the last several years, there's a part of me that is a little bit, you know, just very disheartened by what goes on kind of behind the scenes and
smoke-filled rooms.
That's right. And it doesn't always work out the way that it should, and we don't necessarily know why. And So there are a lot of moving parts. There are a lot of different characters, and there are a lot of self-interests. And right now we're living, you know, San Martin, which is where the town that my farm is in, is a very small town in unincorporated Santa Clara County. But we're right between Gilroy and Morgan Hill, which are fast developed and developing cities. Oh. And so we are starting to feel the, you know, development encroaching in, and those, and you feel the pressure of those. And you know, Andy's Orchard is a good example. And that is an orchard that's been around for several decades that now looks like it won't last another year. It will likely go to developers for residential development.
And that is the pattern.
That is the pattern.
That is the pattern of how cities grow and how we lose our ag lands and how we end up losing track of our food. But Stephanie Rocha, who is the owner of Nest Box Farm in San Martin, California, is fighting that. You can support her and others like her by going to the farm and visiting. Pay her a visit. Buy some of the eggs and grow strong children with those eggs. My goodness. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today, and we wish you the best of luck in your fight to survive as a farmer. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.